Hello and welcome to Country Stride, the podcast dedicated to the landscapes, people and heritage of Cumbria and the Lake District. I'm here today, a bit of industrial noise in the background giving a clue to where we are. We're in the very south of the county, a long way from home for you, Mark. We're looking out over Blackcomb, but we're in an urban maritime setting, somewhere we've not been before, one of the great towns of Cumbria. Where are we today, Mark?
It's a special treat. We went to Walney quite a few episodes ago, and this is our golden opportunity to learn a great deal about the fabulous town of Barrow-in-Furness.
Just before we begin recording and taking our first steps on today's Country Stride, just a couple of notes up front, Mark, in case anybody doesn't listen to the notes at the end of the podcast. This is actually going to be our last recording for a few weeks. I'm about to go and walk from Land's End up to here. You're taking a well-earned break?
I am indeed. I've got various walking trips to do, rather like yourself, but not quite the distance, and a family trip as well. So there we are. I've got plenty on for the next probably 6 weeks.
That's right. But we won't be starving our loyal listeners of their Cumbrian fix. We've got Nick Brownlee from BBC Cumbria lined up for two fabulous episodes. I think he's going to be talking about Felltop Assessors, and also got a lovely podcast lined up about community pubs in Cumbria. Nick, picking up the baton, while we have our first real holiday since we started on Country Stride, whatever it was.
6 years ago.
6 years ago, okay, good. Second bit of news, we've been able to gift £1,000 to Friends of the Oldswater Way for sales of our Oldswater walking companions. So this is one of the things we do. We think if we're going to make some money out of selling our guides, we should reinvest into projects and charities that look after either the communities themselves or all the landscapes around these walking areas. So really pleased to be doing that, and a lot of that is thanks to Country Stride listeners who buy our guides, and of course you can grab them at www.countrystride.co.uk, knowing that you are reinvesting back into the fabric of the lakes. Anyway, look, the sun's out. We're going to explore a lot today, Mark. We're going to go way back in time to where this was just a tiny little hamlet on the end of this peninsula. We're going to move through this incredible period of industrial growth. Such a rapid population increase in a tiny amount of time. And then, of course, and we look behind us now, in the shadow of these huge sheds, I think they're called locally, BAE Systems, manufacturing still ships, these shipyards that are known throughout the UK. And we're also going to talk about the social history of this town, Mark. There's a fabulous art exhibition going on at the moment at a great local organisation here, Art Gene, celebrating the social history of this town through the years, but more recently between the 1940s, the 1980s, looking at how this town's changed. We've got so much to talk about, and we've got two brilliant guests. Who are our guests today, Mark?
Well, we've got John Murphy, who's a Barrovian through and through, who's going to give us a bit of a background on the history of the town and his deeply rooted sense of place. He's been involved with the town council, former mayor, all the ramifications that that brings. And our other guest is Maddie Nicholson. Nothing to do with Norman, but this lady is a powerhouse of art and creativity, and we'll learn a good deal about what Art Gene is and what makes the place bubble.
Can't wait. I can see them standing by the edge of one of the docks looking out over Walney, so let's go and join Maddie and John and begin our first steps on today's Country Stride.
It's a noisy backdrop. Listen to it. Barrow is famous for its sound. And this breeze. Gosh, it's breezy here. And I can at least look at one of my fells, Blackcomb. That's wonderful. I'm at the edge of Walney Channel, looking across to Vicarstown. And to my one side of me is the Graven Dock. Perhaps we'll learn about that and many other things. And I would like to, first of all, learn a little bit about you, Maddie, your love and involvement in Barrow.
Yeah, I'm Maddie Nicholson. I'm the artist founder director of Art Gene. It's an art visual arts company and charity here in Barrow. I live in Barrow. I love it. It's an amazing place. I came in 1989 to do a residency, and I've stayed because it's fabulous, and bring artists from all around the world to work here in the town on projects, have exhibitions, work with communities. Yeah, very much embedded here, and I think now I'm part of the history of the town. I'm that old.
John!
Hello.
Great to see you, John. Thank I know you. You're a thoroughgoing Barrovian. Mm. Can you give me a little bit of your involvement in the town?
Of course I can. Let's go back to early days. I was born 1948 over there on Walney Island. Fell in love with the island, fell in love with the town. The town was completely different then. Very heavy industry, ironworks, steelworks. I've got memories of the sky lighting up at night when they were tipping the slag. I've got all them memories. And then about 40 years ago now, I started to really appreciate the beauty, not only of Barrow, but the Furness Peninsula itself. And I knew there was a large part of the population didn't want to go up the Lake District walking. It was hard work. So between me and my brother, we spent a year devising all these routes around Furness Peninsula and started leading guided walks. And often on a Sunday afternoon, 50, 60, 70 people would turn up and we'd go around the area. So I had to learn more about the history. And then I started doing walks across the sands to Peel Island. And from there, I got more involved in the community, more involved in the people around here. The people are remarkable here in Barrow in Furness. And then I got elected as a councillor. And then eventually I reached a high position of Mayor of Barrow, which is one of the proudest moments of my life, of course. That was way back in 2012. Now years are advancing on me and bits are starting to fall off me. But nevertheless, I still retain this massive interest within the community and with the people of Barrow.
John, I gather you've got a link with Norman Nicholson.
Many years ago, I worked for BT and I was working in Milham, as we often did, and I was given the job of putting a phone in Norman Nicholson's house. I didn't realise at the time that he was a very important person. I didn't have that knowledge at the time. But as years have advanced, I've looked back with great reflection that, yes, I put Norman Nicholson on the phone.
You gave him a voice. Maddie, can you give us a visual expression of what we're looking at? The sheds, as it were. What's in there?
So, yeah, we're looking right over to what is called DDH, which is a Devonshire Dock Hall, which is a big, enormous shed that can be seen from space. Here, locally, we call them a shed. You know, so normally you'd have a garden shed, but this is the biggest shed that there is. And it's where they make the nuclear submarines. And it has huge doors on one end. And in the summer, it's open to let a bit of a breeze. And you can see those big nuclear submarines, which normally are covered under the Official Secrets Act.
And you can notice now, as you just look at it, all the bright colours and so on. This is the new extension for the new Dreadnought project that's going ahead. And the AUKUS, we're just doing a joint shipbuilding with Australia. So they've guaranteed work now in Barrow for the next 40 years, which is amazing. This year alone, they're employing another 4,000 people in this town. We're just on the cusp of expanding massively.
What can we see when we're looking out around here? I believe that's Vicarstown across the water.
Exactly, yeah. Over the other side of the water there, of course, we have my wonderful island, Walney Island. I own that island, or I wish I did. I've lived there all of my life. And here in front of us is Walney Channel. The island itself is integral to the town, because without that island, known as a barrier island, we do get the occasional breeze here, you know. And Walney Island actually protects the mainland from the worst of these Atlantic winds that sweep in. So without that island there protecting this area, the shipbuilding would never, ever have lifted off here. It's only thanks to the island and the protection that it gives to the mainland. Prior to 1908... this was just an island. It was an island covered in trees with two villages, North Scale and Bigger Village. In them days, there was no connection to the mainland. There was two small fords here, and of course you couldn't use a ford when the tide was in. To the south of the bridge that was built in 1908, they used to take workers over in small boats called mudlarks. As we look north, you can see the western fringes of the Lake District, and we've got Black Coombe there. Black Coombe isn't a mountain, it's 1,980 feet high. It needs to be another 20 feet to be a mountain. So it just falls short of being this mountain. And it's said that this is where the name of our town comes from. Many years ago, some cartographers on the other side of the bay around the Morecambe-Heysham area looking north, first thing they see is the imposing hill of Black Coombe. And that accounts for the barrow, the mound. So we've got the barrow in the far distance, the far ness, and that counts for the name of Furness. So we've got the mound in the far distance. And you can see it quite clearly here. And in winter time, of course, it's covered in snow. And we eagerly wait this time of year when it suddenly turns green. As the grass starts to grow, the image of Black Coombe changes completely and becomes green. So we all look forward to that as the start of our summer.
I live on Walney Island as well, like John, and then every morning when I come over the bridge to come to work, I always look over at Black Coombe and I try to see, is it a no coombe day or a coombe day? Because a bit like Mount Fuji, the top of it is often just completely out, or a bit like Table Mountain, you've got clouds going across the top and right down like a tablecloth. And some days there's no coombe at all, and it's a lovely barometer of what the day is about.
The sound has abated a little bit now, but it's famous, the sound that comes from the industrial past, which echoes in this setting.
When I first arrived in Barrow, I was astonished by what I would say all the shouty people. So everywhere you went, it was very noisy. People shouting on the street, people shouting hello to you. Right next to you, they'll be talking, and really loud. And of course, it's because many people have been working in the shipyard. They're getting a bit deaf, you know, from the sound, or just over the general hum of the town.
We call it the Boilermaker's Whisper. And you're right that this noise is of a comfort to us. When I was lying in bed over on Walney Island as a 9-10 year old, and I could hear the riveters and the boilermakers working right through the night, and especially the dredgers, this loud clanking noise of the dredgers that people nowadays would complain about. But we welcomed it because what it meant, it was putting bread on the table, it was putting beer on the bar. So we sort of welcomed this. I never knew what a silent night was until they got rid of the welders and they got rid of the dredging. And it's only then that a mist, this continual noise that now we get only occasionally.
Fascinating. It's lovely to hear genuine local people with the warmth of connection that you have. We'll make a few actual strides because we haven't walked far yet. And we'll learn about the early history. There's this dock here next to us, the Greven Dock. What's the story there?
The Greven Dock was built for a very important skill. It was a dry dock. You could sail boats in, then the water was pumped out. And Greven, it was a skill of getting to the bottom of these boats and taking all the old barnacles off, cleaning them, repainting them, and sending them back out to work again. So this was an important element of the early shipbuilding in the town. As a child growing up here, I would say 8 or 9 years old, which is almost 70 years ago now, this area was red because the main iron and steel industry was slightly to the north of us. And just over there, a couple of hundred yards away, was the Cairns Iron Foundry, which again was red. It was iron ore everywhere. And this was full of railway lines, railway trucks, heavy industry all around here. But as children, we used to come here and play. And because this dock is rather large, we had our own name for it, and it certainly wasn't the Greven Dock, because we genuinely believed that there was many thousands of men working the shipyard, and them men would eat a lot of meat pies, and therefore they would require gravy. And as far as we're concerned, this was a gravy dock.
Anyway, well, next is the story of the town itself, before it was a town, really. Going really back in time, John.
How the area developed is very interesting. I mean, way back in the 1100s, King Stephen granted land here in the Furness Peninsula for the monastic rule to build an abbey. And these monks came from Savigny in France, moved slowly north, finally settled down in Tulketh, just outside Preston, and eventually wandered the way up to the Furness Peninsula, where they found the beautiful secluded valley known as the Valley of the Deadly Nightshade. Completely isolated from the rest of the country and a perfect place for prayer, for meditation and so on. And it was the monks that first discovered these deposits of hematite ore, the richest ore in the world. And the monks managed to use this ore for their own utensils and so on. But the monks, as they were developing and as they were expanding and dragging more and more people into the auspices of Furness Abbey, they started to educate people, started to teach people how to farm. And it became a massive powerhouse. The monastic rule here in Furness spread as far as Isle of Man, some parts of Ireland, and as far north as Scottish borders. It became the second largest abbey. And there's a story, the monks were very devious. Although they were highly religious, they were also devious, and they had every trick in the book to make money. So what they do is, when a local landowner was lying on his deathbed, the monks would visit and say, look, we will guarantee you the key to heaven. This is how you get to heaven, we promise. All you had to do was a commitment to the monastic rule, and that commitment was very simple. Give us everything you own. Give us your land, give us your chattels, give us your money. And very, very quickly, this expanded with this land ownership. In them days, the monks were good at raising sheep, and grazing sheep in the Furness Peninsula here. And even in them days, there was a tax put on export of sheep out of Furness. All sheep in the UK had to go through the port of Boston on the East Coast, where you paid a tax. The monks didn't want to pay that tax. So they hid the sheep on a place that's still known as Sheep Island here in Walney Channel. They hid the sheep on there. And then in the middle of the night, or on quieter times, they would export them sheep over to Europe from here. So they didn't have to pay that tax. And it was only in 1537 when Henry VIII was on the throne, he thought, these guys have got too much. They've got too much power, too much influence, and they won't let me divorce my wife anyway. So he set up known as a Pilgrimage of Grace. They gradually spread throughout the country, shutting these abbeys down in turn. And in 1537, this was the time for Furness Abbey. What happened immediately after that was massive famine in the small town of Dalton, 5 miles from here. Massive famine, because these people had relied on the help and the support of the monks in the abbey, and that disappeared overnight. It's rather like if you shut the shipyard down now, people here would be floundering. They wouldn't know what to do, and that's exactly what happened. That period of our history died off virtually in 1537. And it's only when we come towards the Industrial Revolution in the middle 1800s that it developed again. And this is when these investors came into the town looking for iron ore.
This humble state of this place persisted right until the early decades of the 19th century. Yep. What was the transition point?
Around this area, there was a little village known as Barrow Head, roughly where the town centre is now, near to where Morrison's is. There was a farm, but very, very little else. Not even any fishing industry. Purely farming. It was a hamlet of about 70 people. So Barrovians can't really trace a lineage before that period, because there was nothing here. What happened then is they needed coal. Coal was the feed, if you will, of the Industrial Revolution. And it was thought that there was coal in this area. This guy came from Switzerland, Henry Schneider, and he came here looking for coal.
Now, you're introducing an important figure here, Schneider, from Switzerland, I gather.
Yeah.
What was his background?
He was an engineer, and he was an investor. He was a man that was ready to make money off developing towns. And like I was saying there, he hadn't found coal. And then he discovered the richest seam of iron ore found anywhere in the world. About 70% iron. It was that rich in iron that we had to import ore from Sweden of a weaker quality because it was too perfect. Now, from this major discovery, almost immediately other investors were interested and they came into the town. Once you've got iron ore, you're leading onto an iron and steelworks. Over a matter of 4 or 5 years, really, this iron and steelworks became the biggest in the world. It was producing iron at a phenomenal rate. It's a natural lead on to that, because once you've got iron, that brings in other investors like Sir James Ramsden, the saviour of our town. He bought the railway system into Furness because of this iron ore. The Furness Railway, Sir James was only 23 when he came to Barrow as a railway engineer. And he started to construct the railway coming in onto the mainland because he saw the germ, if you will, of this massive, massive growth that offered great potential and certainly an opportunity to make a great amount of money. And the whole town, the whole area, they call it the Chicago of England. Massive industrial growth, massive money coming into the town, massive amount of people. Barrow became a rich town because these people were earning more money. So they were coming in from Germany, they were coming in from Cornwall, Ireland, everywhere.
And you needed coal as well, wouldn't you, surely?
We needed coal. Coal had to be imported because we didn't have coal. So we have places up the coast like Whitehaven, of course, where coal was produced. Limestone was found locally because when you make this iron, you heat the iron ore, literally a rock, and you add a load of lime into it, you heat it up to 12,000 degrees. The lime removes the impurities out of the iron ore, the bits that aren't iron, and they literally float to the top and are skimmed off. I can remember going back 1950s, railway wagons leaving from here full of molten impurities, and they were tipped just outside the town, it's still there, created a massive slag bank. And as kids, we used to stand over on Walney Island looking across and watching these trucks tip this molten waste and the sky lit up red.
Ruskin said he could look over from Brantwood and he said he could see the hellfires burning, which I think was a delightful phrase. And that was Barrow because of the slag being poured out onto the slag banks.
Maddie, could you give us a reminder as to the three founding fathers of the town, which really are significant?
So we have Schneider, who we've already talked about, and we have Ramsden, who I think's fantastic, a guy with a big top hat. And then the third is Cavendish, the third founding father, from Holker Hall, and it was to do with the land. But I'd like to say, as a woman, I think there's many founding women of the town that aren't written in history. So, I mean, if I was to do some statues of the town, I would have one of Peggy Braithwaite, who was the first principal lady lighthouse keeper, amazing woman, who I've seen images of her, and she had the largest muscles and upper arms from polishing the lights down on South Walney in the lighthouse there. Notoriously, she would shoot her gun at rabbits from the top of the light, and various kids thought it was them that were being shot at.
She was a very formidable lady, and I can remember going down there with a friend of mine. We went to get some mushrooms, and they had a carrier bag full of mushrooms, and Peggy had been watching us. And she come running across and she started berating us for being on the reserve, being too near the lighthouse. And she said, Murphy, what have you got in that bag? I said, it's some mushrooms. She said, well, you can go and put them right back now where they belong. And I always remember that was my encounter with Peggy. She was formidable and an amazing lady. And might I say, one of the first women libbers that this country has ever seen. She was an amazing lady.
Intriguingly, from about 1840 onwards, Barrow had an incredible growth. Industry was blossoming, and it required workers, and they came in profusion.
So around that period when Barrow Head was the only little village here, we went from a population of this like 70 up to about 50,000 quickly. Very, over a period of maybe less than a decade, certainly less than a decade. No town in the UK had that massive almost overnight growth. There was words written about it being a rough, tough town. It was a hard town, full of very hard men and hard women. And then the pubs came, and it became harder and tougher. The image still remains, although Barrow now is a calm and a peaceful place, apart from Friday night in the town centre.
Black Eye Friday.
Black Eye Friday, we all know. They try to change that to Happy Friday or something like that. But yeah, it was this growth. So much so that there wasn't enough housing for them. They built huts all over. Only a few yards from here was a small village built to accommodate the Irish workers.
Shantytown.
Yeah, Shantytown. When they dug the Dev Dock Hall out, it's now covered, of course, in this big shed we've already referred to, the Irish did what was called paddling. And they hand-dug these docks and then put a clay base at the bottom. And these Irishmen were employed purely and simply to walk up and down in the clay, to compact the clay into the ground to make it impervious to water seepage. It was an incredible thing. And then they looked, as I mentioned, about over again to Walney Island. Only trees, a couple of villages, nothing there. And they looked at that as a saviour and started constructing these houses. And the houses were constructed in a very, very controlled social manner. The houses we can see at the front, they were to take the managers, the doctors, the top people, the smaller terrace houses in between, they were for the workers, for the fitters, for the joiners, for the electricians. Smaller houses, again, for the labourers and so on. And it was a social thing. You could not move. If Auntie Di died, and she left you £10,000. You could not move into a bigger house. So it was a social thing. The higher you were up the ladder, the better the property you were allocated. I do want to bring a reference of the wonderful Wanley Bridge in. And you can imagine these workers in the morning, 7 o'clock, a buzzer blew while you were here, Maddie, in them days. You know, like a church, you'd ring the bells to call the worshippers to prayer. Here, it was a buzzer to call the workers to the lathe. And that went on at 7:25, the first buzzer. And that took them to the machine or to wherever they were working. At 7:30, the other buzzer went, you picked up your tools and you started work. Then at 4:25, the buzzer went, you put your tools down. 4:30, you walked out the gate. And this is in my lifetime. I can remember as a child looking at the bridge and watching these workers, flat caps, massive, massive army coats, clown-like boots, going over that bridge into what I imaged as a place of hell. I kept out the shipyard simply because of that. I didn't want to go to hell. And these guys were tied down. The buzzer went at 12 o'clock for dinner. At 1 o'clock it went, you go back. And the workers at 12 o'clock would be home on the pushbikes where the wives would be waiting. I know of many families on Walney that insisted on going home to a roast dinner. And the wife just changed the meat each day. So at 12 o'clock the dinner was on the table. At 12:25 dinner was over, back on the pushbikes and back into this hell. And it was a hell, riveting, gouging, these trades that to me were horrific, but that was our heritage.
I'm intrigued by the name Vickerstan. Where does the name Vicker come from?
So Vickers was the shipbuilding company at the time, and they built Vickerstown, which is an amazing garden city. The plans for it are in the Dock Museum just behind us. Like a proper garden city, they were thinking about their workers. You got the best out of them if you fed them well and looked after them and gave them amazing accommodation. So there was a whole farm on the north of Walney, and the streets were built wide, with pavements, much better than those dense terraces which were nearer to the shipyard. Houses, as John was describing earlier, were built very quickly and went up in sets of four. The tents, which were there beforehand, came down, and the sets of four houses came up, and I live in one of those little sets of four.
I get this picture of this huge number of people coming over to work in the foundries, sort of the crowd that would fill Old Trafford or Anfield. Vickers, of course, is a Liverpool name, I believe. So this is an Anfield crowd coming across the bridge when the buzzer goes. What was it like then, Maddie?
They'd have this little yellow line where everybody stood waiting for the buzzer to go. And it was just a surge of people. You took your life in your hands trying to cross the road. You just stood back and let everybody go forward. And a mass of men on bikes. It was a very big bike town. Loads of blokes, often with their right leg pointed at an angle. I don't know how they all managed to navigate the street together. Fantastic sort of image to see. And there's amazing old photos in the Dock Museum of people just surging across the bridge. Hundreds and thousands of people.
When you were taking your driving test, the one dread you would have that your driving test would say due for 12 o'clock, because there's no way you could drive through this crowd. And like Maddie just said, at 4:25 that buzzer had blown. By then they were massed behind the gates. The gates were locked. At 4:30 the gates were forced open, often by the workers themselves in the rush to get away from this hell. The amount of thievery that went on in there was unbelievable. A favourite story of my father was a guy wanted a little bit of wood to do a bit of work at home, cut a small 4 or 5 foot plank or 3 foot plank, and he put it up the back of his overalls and went to get the bus to go home. There was no seats downstairs, so he held this wood carefully, went up the stairs, sat down on the bus in front of two managers, and of course as he sat down this little plank of wood shot out the top of his overalls and knocked his flat cap off, and the two managers were sat behind him.
Mum.
Oh, John, you're great.
Well, that's fascinating, setting the scene. There's a bit of a chill in the air and it looks like it might be a bit wet. So now we're heading towards the town hall to talk about the war. We have had a lovely wander through the town. We've come through to Duke Street, and impressively, John and Maddie have introduced me to the most stupendous building I've ever seen in Cumbria, which is the Town Hall. of Barrow-in-Furness, which soars above us here with a central tower with a clock face. Looks like Big Ben in a sense, and it's a sandstone building with a wonderful array of windows. So, John, can you tell us a little bit about this building?
I can tell you a massive amount about this building. It's my favourite building by far, and we're so proud of the town hall. This dates back to the 1800s, 1850s, 1860s, when they decided they'd need a civic centre for the town. They need an administration. So this was the original village pond here, and this was suggested as being the base for our wonderful town hall. Barrow was ready to beat Liverpool. It was ready to outbuild any other shipbuilding town in the country. So these Victorians had big plans. What they did at the time is they put a competition out in the Times newspaper to build a new town hall or new administration centre. And there's a company in Belfast took an interest called WH Linz. WH Linz had already designed and constructed big buildings in Manchester and in Rochdale. So they came here and had a look and decided that they would go ahead, and they put the plans forward. Anyway, they started to construct this wonderful, wonderful tower using local sandstone from Ormsgill Quarry, a couple of miles north of here. But they made a mistake. With sandstone, the bottom is much, much stronger than the top because it's been down there and compressed for many millions of years. But they made the mistake of taking the sandstone from the top of the quarry, bringing it down here, and started to construct the tower. As the tower got halfway up, it started to lean because it was weak at the bottom. So they had to rebuild the tower. And they had to actually take the soft sandstone and put that at the top, which is why the opening of the town hall was 1887. The date stone at the back is 1885. It took them 2 years to reconstruct and get this wonderful tower. But if you look closely at it, and many people don't, there is many missing bits. You can see at the front here, for instance, there's some plaques, they're blank. You can see above the windows, shields, they're blank. They ran out of money. They did not manage to finish it to its perfection that was planned. But it's been here ever since, and it's still used now for administration. It's an incredibly beautiful building inside. And as you look sort of at the top, you can see a statue of Queen Victoria, very small beneath them two louvered windows. This coincided the opening with Queen Victoria's Jubilee.
Now, I've done
1887, precisely. I've done some research, and it is thought that Queen Victoria, although it wasn't greatly publicised, Queen Victoria did come to Barrow and was here at the opening.
From the Victorian age when this incredible town hall was built, if we move into the early days of the 20th century, with the prospect of the First World War looming, there was a great deal happening in the context of Barrow.
Yeah, Barrow was building. They were ready to rearm. They knew that war was around the corner. The atmosphere was building up in Europe, as we all know. And this is when the main shipping started here. Ships like Dreadnought, what a wonderful name, Dreadnought, Vengeance. All these ships were all being constructed. And again, bringing more workers in for this ship construction, this massive growth. Barrow's town motto is Semper Sursum. Semper Sursum simply means forever rising. And surely enough, Barrow's a town like that. During the time building up to the war, the population shot up again. 60, 70,000 people coming into work in the shipyard for this rearmament. We started to build guns here, ships, everything associated with this pending war.
And then we're not talking just about sea-going ships, we're talking about air-going ships.
Yeah, Barnes Wallace came here and helped to build what they call the dirigibles that were never successful. Over on Walney Island, they built a massive shed. And in that shed, they built these airships designed and planned by Barnes Wallace, of course, who invented the bouncing bomb. I've seen pictures, and no doubt Maddie's seen the pictures as well, of German airships coming over Barrow pre-war, surveying the town, if you will, and there's many famous photographs just above our heads here, this massive German one. Then, of course, they built the Mayfly.
The Mayfly was an airship that was built here in Barrow. It was tested, and it was called Mayfly because it, you know, may or may not fly, and it didn't. It broke in half. It snapped like a twig in a very long, beautiful, elegant shape, and it had a small sort of carriage underneath where people operated it. But there's an amazing photograph of it actually snapping, and it was over Cavendish dock so that if people fell into the water, they're less likely to kill themselves than, on land. And on Walney Island, where the shed was that they built the airship, the road around it was called Airship Shed Road.
I mean, when you think about it, it's the perfect weapon of war. It's silent and carry good loads and could sneak up on the enemy. But it didn't work. They even tried it commercially, as you're well aware. That didn't work either. So it's something that's been forgotten about and now is part of our history. But it's a proud thing to say that Sir Barnes Wallace himself lived on Walney Island at the time.
Coming through to the Second World War, Germany was targeting Barrow as somewhere to eliminate.
The problem is, we were right on the fringe of the range of the bombers. Lord Haw-Haw himself said on radio, and Barrow in Furness, we haven't forgotten you. The day after, by the way, we had our own blitz where many people were killed in the town, many buildings were destroyed in the town centre. But the Germans had what they call a Baedeker maps, which was maps of every town. And there was a confusion amongst these German bombers that, like I say, were right on the fringe of their range. There was a confusion of what was the docks and what was the channel. So when they thought they were hitting the shipyard, in actual fact, they confused the dock system with the channel and mismeasured. Hence, the shipyard virtually escaped. We had a lot of things happening. We built a big aircraft carrier called Invincible. There were spies, German spies in the town. And a few weeks before they were sailing the Invincible out, they actually made a giant barge and put lights on it to emulate the Invincible. And they towed this big barge down the channel with all the flashing lights and everything on it. So the spies reported the Invincible had actually left the town. Waited till all the pressure died off, then they took the Invincible out safely. So we never actually got any hits, if you will, or very few hits on the shipyard, but they certainly hit the railway station around York.
Yeah, they hit the Nantate Centre where Art Jean's based and knocked one of the parapets off and got rid of the building opposite.
There was a thought at the time that the Germans were going to put some runways over in Ireland, and if they put them in Ireland, then we would become directly in range. And I'll go back again to when I was a child. There's a big open space on one they call Bigger Bank. And even now, there's marks where they dug trenches because they thought they might have used gliders to invade and to land on that open space. And because of these trenches, the Germans couldn't have done that. So it was a very interesting part of our history.
We'll move forward in time. And Maddie, you can give us a feeling for what we're going to talk about now.
OK, so we're on the head of Duke Street here, and we're going to talk about the shops and the history of the shops, the sort of social history. So over the last 4 years, we've been working with what was Barrowborough Council, now Westmorland and Furness Council, on a huge programme of works around the High Street Heritage Action Zone. As part of that process, we've been working on a cultural programme to go in tandem with a whole series of grants around shops to sort of upgrade the shops. Us as an arts organisation, and been working with another three arts organisations, Signal Film and Media, Theatre Factory and FON. Each year we've been looking at different things. It's been film, it's been performance, it's been visual arts, and all the wonderful stories that have come from looking at the history of this street.
Very good. Well, when the bus has just gone by, we'll make a stride down the street and you can introduce us to the facades. Right, Maddie, this is a fascinating scene before us. Could you describe what we're looking at?
So we're just looking down Duke Street, and we've got this amazing historic street. It was built really around the 1860s to 1880s, you know, at different points, different shops went up. We're right on the corner, quite near to the town hall, and we're at the site of what was the most amazing department store. It was called Pass & Co, and it was a beautiful building. When you look at the old photos, it was striped brickwork, lots of pointing roofs. Had a bit of a feel of the houses on Vicarstown, to be honest. Pass & Co was known locally. Its sort of byline was anything from a pin to a piano, a bit like the Woolworths of its day. And in the ground floor, it had very early on a company that sold pianos and music. And it was an amazing store, a labyrinth, really. And then later on, when I first arrived in the town, it was at Wetherspoons. But very soon after that, it was demolished, which was a real shame.
Can you describe any other particular shops?
what's now the Priory, which is a hairdresser's on Duke Street, used to be a place where you could get your passage to another country. There was some fantastic photographs that were discovered of whole families buying tickets to go to Australia.
That's interesting about the exodus of Barrow, because during the Depression, of course, many people did move out of the town, and they moved over to Canada. Many Barrovians, including my own father, moved away to Canada in them days, because, and go back to Semper Sursum, 1920s, we were on our knees in this town. This town was dying and it wasn't going to recover, and many young people left and explored the rest of the world. But what we're finding now, these youngsters are, you know, 19 to 35 year olds, they're going away still, they're going to university, they're going away to study. Once they've had their education, they're realising that it's a good town they're coming from, and they're coming back, and they're coming back in numbers. If I can tie this with something that I remember as a child, in the shipyard you had this strata, this layer, so you had the workers, and then you had charge hands, which were a step above them, and then the foreman above them. Even in the working men's clubs, the workers would be sat at that table, charge hands at that table, and the foreman with the ties on was sat at another table. The social split was very strong, and Barrow carried this embarrassingly social difference between people, even down to the joke, or the serious joke I just made about the foreman wearing ties. It was true. And people are now growing away from that Victorian attitude.
Have you got a third property you can remember, Maddie?
Yeah, we've also got another lovely store, which is now T&T Records, an amazing record store. And that was fantastic, actually. Early on, it was a hairdresser's and took over the stores that were next to it. And it was Middleton's Hairdressers. It was run by Arthur and Winifred Middleton. They named it Middleton Court Hairdressers. They did loads of fancy hairdos. At one point, they had over 25 staff there. Great to see that Barrow's history of having fantastic hairdos started off there with Middleton's.
Well, we're going to leave Duke Street now and make a headway towards your base, Maddie, at Artgene. Fascinating. Maddie, you brought me to the Nan Tate Centre. We hear the echo in this building. It's a fascinating building.
Yeah, so we're here in the Nan Tate Centre, which is where Artgene has its premises. We have an amazing gallery on the first floor, and I'm going to take you in and show you some of the works. We started off with a series of memory stalls where we went out into the town and asked people to remember the history of different shops, how they did shopping, how they worked in the town. And then I'll show you some of the work that's come from that.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that. It looks like a moose.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the moose's head. So anyone from Barrow knows about the moose, which used to be in the library in Barrow as you went up the stairs, and loads of kids came in and would touch its nose as they went up the stairs. But why is it here? So it's obviously around the history of Duke Street. The library stands at the very end of Duke Street on Ramsden Square, looking out at Ramsden's statue. But Fawn, Full of Noises, who are the sound art company in the town, they did, as part of this four-year programme of cultural events, they created this amazing shop in the high street and gathered together lots of historical artefacts. And this was one of those things that they brought into the shop, and loads of people remember it.
Now we've got this amazing space, various things around the wall. There's one with shop fronts, a series of pictures. And I don't know how I explain that one there.
It's a big collage.
It's a collage. Yeah. That's to do with hairdos, is it?
It is, yeah. So this is an amazing collage done by an artist, Sarah Hardacre. So we brought her in as artist in residence to work in the street. And she looked at loads of historic photographs and then collaged them together. And she was particularly interested in one of the shops we talked about earlier, which was Middleton's Hairdressers, or House of Middleton, as they grandly called themselves. And she's taken lots of historic images of hair and wrapped them up into a beautiful collage with the bus where they went off on their all the Middleton staff went off on their jolly out down to Blackpool. Barrow's always known for long, beautiful hair.
And how about yourself, though?
I have very short hair. I'm completely different in that respect. But there's loads of hairdressers here, and I think the big history of hairdressing. And certainly it's a big part of local culture. You know, getting yourself dressed up for a night out. And in the days that we're looking at here, from the sort of 40s onwards, I mean, hair was a big thing, and for a period of time was very big and tall and backcombed. And it's really quite interesting to see different sort of hairstyles, pin waves, etc. But loads of people remembered going to, particularly Middleton's, which closed, but I think, in the 60s.
Barra is a place where you can let your hair down.
Oh, beautifully said. You can absolutely let your hair down in Barra.
There's almost a forgotten history of women in the town, and it's true of many places. But have you picked up on it yourself?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think often history is written by men and is the history of working men. You know, that's just the nature of it. But what's lovely is to be able to show the stories of women. They're often missed or not looked at. I think the very different view really is people-orientated view. It's around supporting, about managing. It's often not about earning, but it's often about families and all of the support network that goes to make a great town that produces fantastic ships and submarines.
It's a family-orientated perspective.
Family-orientated. And I think now it's very interesting for women now to see how focused somewhere like Barra has been on family, you know, when women now are allowed to sort of choose those options. Back in the day, we're talking to these ladies who are bank tellers, you weren't even allowed to have a checkbook yourself. You weren't allowed to buy a washing machine. You had to get your partner to come in and or your husband to come in and sign a check. And I think that's interesting for young people to come and see that here in the exhibition. Places many other things other than just the industry. You know, there is an amazing cultural history around women and women's clothes and hairdressing and shopping and family life. For me, that's an incredibly important part of the town.
And there's another little feature, which is like pies.
Yeah, so, I mean, John was talking earlier about the amazing pies that would be all part of the shipyards. I think if I had to sum Barra up in probably one foodstuff, I would say it's Barra's meat and potato pie. Notorious, loved by many, but the word meat is used, so you're never quite sure what type of meat that is. However,
not moose, maybe.
No, definitely not moose. So as part of a project for Peel Island, when we were doing sort of a cabinet of curiosities there, we asked lots of different local pie shops if they could make in clay Barra meat and potato pie. So they're clay pies, then we've gilded them, covered them with gold, because to be honest, they're really important things.
Well, and now a final thing we've come to see, and it's item number 13. Not unlucky. In fact, it's a game of chance. Yeah. It's Monopoly. Goodness me. Now, this is a bit of your star performance, design and imagination, Maddy. Describe it to us.
Yeah, so this is sort of my take on a Monopoly. It's a game of community and chance, and it's called Duke Street. And I've looked at the history of each of the shops, and we have them around the edge of the board. We've got community, knowledge and chance cards. On the chance cards, there's one that says pensioners' meals, fish and chips are running out. What can the forum do? You know, that's one of the events on it. We've also got a whole series of counters. So there's one there which is hair from Middleton's. There's a pint pot from Jefferson's, the pub. And then there's also a pin from a pin to a piano. And we have a dog bone as well, because Barra is well known for its dogs. And around the board, we've got various things like the town hall at one end and Barra Library and Archive at the other end. If you own a shop on Duke Street, I've always felt that it really is like a game of chance, especially during COVID and the moving onto the internet of sales and things. So I'm much in awe of shopkeepers and their ability to keep going. So I felt I just wanted to make this for them. But for me, one of the most delightful things as an arts company struggling for money was to be able to design and print out money on our big printing machine. That was a really lovely day.
This has been a fascinating view around your space, Maddy. Now we'll reconnect with John and retire to a different space and do a majestic little quick fires based on this wonderful town of Barrow-in-Furness. What a wonderful evocation of Barrow. you've both given us, it's been marvellous, you've given us their background to many aspects of the town. But to conclude, it's far better that we use the quickfire moments to bring out your spontaneous reactions to things that are dear and near to your hearts. So this is a very special Barrow edition of our quickfires. Now, I'll start with you, Maddie. What is your favourite view?
Oh, my favourite view of Barrow, I think it's being on Walney Island and looking out across the Irish Sea. I think that's fantastic.
Oh, my favourite view is easy. I do these guided walks across the sands to Peel Island when the tide has just gone out, and just to stand there 2 hours after full tide and look at the view right up to the channel and to Peel Island, fantastic.
Maddie, your favourite Barrow pub?
Well, I think it would have to be the Ship Inn on Peel Island. Many years ago, Art Jean, we did the interior of the pub out with a big cabinet of curiosities, special beer maps and engraved tables. So to me, that's my favourite pub. But as John knows, it is the most beautiful place in the world to be on Peel Island.
Is the King still there?
The King is definitely still there. New King, Aaron, is a lovely chap. So any chance anybody gets to go and visit, please do. It's worth a day out.
Come and walk it with me.
Absolutely.
And your favourite pub, John?
Oh, it's Maddie's stolen my thunder here. I live just round the corner from a wonderful, massive pub opened in 1908, the King Alfred. Or, on a Friday night, it's very lively in town, Witherspoon's here in Barrow, cheapest beer you can ever find. That'll do for me.
Fabulous. Maddie, your favourite street, as if I should ask.
Oh, my favourite street. Well, I'm drawn between Duke Street, of which we know a great deal about, and Abbey Road, which the Nantate Centre is on, which is where we are now and where Art Jean has its premises. But also, I just think, generally, all of those streets in Barrow that have got names of ships, I just find them fascinating, and they're a constant journey through history for me. So, any street in Barrow.
Yeah, just following up, I live in Mikasa Street, over Walney, which is named after a Japanese ship that was built in here. She's still preserved as a museum over in Yokucha in Japan. I went to see her a couple of years ago.
Maddie, your favourite Barrow building?
Well, definitely it would have to be the Nantate Centre or the Old Tech College. That's this building here. We're actually, at the moment, in what used to be the old men's toilets for this old technical school. Yes, an inconvenience indeed, but now beautifully designed out by myself and Stuart Bastick into Art Jean's office.
Oh, you put me on the spot because there's so many across Barrow Town Hall, which you've been fortunate enough to have a brief look at. But couldn't leave this without Furness Abbey, built in 1127. Contains every bit of English architecture right through to the Tudor period in 1537 when it shut down. Furness Abbey on a summer's evening, amazing.
Marvellous. I should mention the Luttian's house, but there again, that's another thing again. OK, how would you describe, Maddie, the character of Barrow?
Stalwart, enthusiastic, passionate, amazing salt of the earth people. They'll welcome you in for a cup of tea and you'll stay there the whole afternoon having a conversation. The character, it's all about meat pies, wind farms, history, submarines, six spotted burnet moths, every single thing that you can think of.
Yeah, not many people know this, but almost two-thirds of our borough is a designated nature reserve. Barrow is unique. It's because of our isolation. The people are unique. They still support each other. And you can still knock at your next-door neighbour and ask for a cup of sugar. That just covers Barrow in Furness for me.
OK, and finally, can you imagine a way to spend a lazy Sunday in Barrow?
Yeah, well, for me, a lazy Sunday would be sort of walking along the beach on Walney Island, right up to North Walney Nature Reserve, through the sand dunes, and looking out at the view of Blackcombe in the distance.
I'm coming on that walk with Maddie. That's my Sunday afternoon. Lovely, thank you very much.
It will be a very stately walk, just as our conversation has been today. Thank you, the pair of you.
Thank you.
journey's end, and we find ourselves with a cup of tea, nice and warm, in the offices at Artgene, which is lucky because it started getting very cold and very wet outside, Mark.
I was frozen. Maddie was colder than me, but she was nowhere near as cold as you, holding that microphone in that cold. Oof.
Anyway, we're warm now, and it was great fun today. I really enjoyed that. I didn't quite know what to expect, but we got a bit of everything celebrating this immense town.
Yeah, you can see how easily you could take it as the centre of the universe, especially with John's enthusiasm. Maddie's fallen in love with the place. Well, she's been there 30 years, I think. But I mean to say, the whole ambience of two people who are enveloped in the place. John with his knowledge of the history of it and the social history that he feels very much a part of.
Yeah, and Maddie equally celebrating the town via art in all its forms. That balance of, sure, yeah, the shipyards, the industry, versus hairdressing, for example. Lovely to get both sides of that story, I thought. I love some of John's memories. That vision of the people crossing the bridge when the buzzer went, and then this idea that actually it can be too quiet, you know, without the noise of the reavers and the workers of the steel and the iron. Absolutely fascinating snapshot of, I guess, heavy industry that's, well, I say not here anymore. It very much is, and that's part of the story of the town, isn't it?
Absolutely. The comment about everybody speaking loud, it's a bit like me.
That's true. Yeah, you fit in well around here, Mark.
I'm a Barovian, obviously.
Of the many highlights today, a little bit of kind of behind-the-scenes stuff. John very kindly invited us into the town hall. I have to say, I was kind of blown away by it. It is an incredible building. For my money, I think that may be the most impressive municipal building that I've been to in Cumbria.
Clearly the best one in Cumbria, best in space and ambience. There was a ceiling in it which was blue, just like Carlisle Cathedral.
Yeah, very similar actually, wasn't it? And there were these beautiful stained glass windows, every one different, with a scene from Barrow's history. Guys, absolutely blown away by it. And for different reasons, the exhibition itself had some very moving pieces in it. And some more frivolous ones. You know, I loved Maddie's really fun kind of Monopoly board, all handmade. What a space that is, full of creative energy. If you are interested in visiting this exhibition, or indeed learning more about so many of the projects that Artgene are doing, again, for my money, I think it's one of the most exciting creative enterprises in the county. Their website, art-gene, that's gene.co.uk, and you can find out more about Maddie there as well, who's a fascinating artist in her own right. That's us wrapping up for today. The usual housekeeping: it is contributions from listeners that keep this ship in a town of shipbuilders afloat.
Not a submarine ship.
No, we don't want to go down like the Mayfly that doesn't fly. If you want to join our supporters, you can go to www.countrystride.co.uk. For as little as £2 a month, you can support us and keep us wandering around the county, bringing you these stories. You can also buy one of our many guidebooks, Country Stride guidebooks, lovely walks with the Country Stride look and feel, with some of Mark's lovely artwork. Again, you can buy them, www.countrystride.co.uk. Well, other than that, I think we're saying goodbye from Barrow on a blustery evening after a fabulous walk around a great town. See you on next fortnight's Country Stride.